to cook a lot more for you, but I just don't like enjoy it.
You don't enjoy cooking?
No. You're the one who gets pleasure from cooking in this dynamic. I make practical mom meals for the week, and then you make all the fancy stuff.
I like presenting you with a nice meal.
I know, it's really sweet. It's really
Don't you
sweet.
Feel like a sense of like satisfaction and accomplishment when you cook like a really tasty meal and you've like given it to someone and they're like, oh this is amazing.
I do, but I don't like the process of actually making it. Like, I don't actually enjoy like cooking very much. It's like a chore, like any other chore to me.
Oh no, like cleaning is a much worse chore.
Which is
than
why
cooking.
You mess the kitchen up with all you turn into Chef Ramsay and then you make a ton of mess and then I have to fucking clean it.
You mean I turn into Randy Marsh from South Park?
Yeah, cream-free shit.
Okay, I cooked, you guys gotta clean up, I gotta go now, bye.
That's literally it. Because I don't like cooking, I don't like the process of having to clean afterwards. I do like to make meals that make people happy though. Like, I do get a sense of accomplishment for that, but it's more of just like, this is the practical food that we're going to eat in the week, and then you can have fancy stuff on the weekends. But you want fancy stuff every day, which is a thing.
You can.
Well, like, I'm not a machine, for fuck's sake.
But if you can have fancy food every day, you should try.
So much fucking pressure that you put on me. And, like, the worst thing in the world is when I've, like, made a meal for you and then you're not happy with it. And you try to hide that you're not happy with it, but you're like shit at it, hiding it.
Well, you can't. It's like, you know, I remember like having that experience with my mum when I was little and it not going down very well.
What?
And then it's sort of only as I'm like an adult that I realize like, oh yeah, even if like, let alone the parent-child dynamic, that's already traumatizing enough to hear that news as a woman, I guess.
What, that your kid doesn't like your food?
Yeah, or like that you didn't like that one and they want something else. It's like, well, I've just spent an hour making you that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't just magic out a dinner out of my ass that's different from this.
So. When I first graduated for uni, one of my first jobs was like babysitting, and that used to happen to me all the time, where I would make these kids fucking food and they would like be like, this is gross, I don't want to eat it because it has prawns in it. And I'm like, eat the fucking prawns. Like,
oh mate.
Like, literally, I'd spend like an hour cooking them a nice meal. But like, I realized that like a lot of it wasn't actually tailored to like a kid's palate.
But it's fish fingers, mate. And like, you know,
I tried to make like nice pasta and things like, they don't want that at all.
No.
They want to eat fucking chicken nuggets and
yeah,
like boiled vegetables with no seasoning or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, they love that shit.
It's really disappointing. You're picky, which is a thing, because you want stuff that's going to titillate your belly, not just like fill you up or whatever.
I'm just one of those people that if you've got something in your mind that you really want to eat, and then you are like, oh, we're going to have something else, totally not that, for dinner tonight. I'm just a little bit like, oh, okay.
You show your disappointment. It makes you feel really upset.
Let's soldier through and, you know, maybe my cravings will come back another day.
I'm like, dude, I'm making couscous. And like your face, you act as if I've just said like punishment or something.
Yeah, maybe I've been thinking about having like not something unhealthy, like a soup or something like that. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to make couscous. It's like, it's the literal opposite end of the flavor spectrum that I was going for. But
dude, you should be grateful with whatever I give you, number one.
I am very grateful.
Good.
That you've been making lots of tasty meals recently.
And secondly, you demand...
You don't have to moan about it so much.
Oh, thank you.
Just as some slight feedback.
Fuck you.
The meals have been amazing, but you don't have to remind me that you've cooked them every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, well, you should like be more effusive with your praise, and then maybe like reel back on the criticism, and then maybe I won't complain so much. No, but seriously, you also demand your 3,000 calories a day.
It depends what I'm doing.
I didn't realize how hard it was to feed a grown man until like I got with you, and like, because I don't get hungry during the day that much, and like, I was feeding you on my schedule, like what I eat. And by the time evening rolls around, you're like pissed off because you're hungry. And then if I put like a sort of, I guess, minimalist meal in front of you, your displeasure is like felt. Even if you don't say it, it's like very much felt. And like, yeah, it kind of made me realize that men do need more fucking calories, and you like want your 3,000, and if I don't give them to you, you'll like make them up by going and getting food elsewhere.
Well, and it's a very naughty place to live to have that kind of feeling at the end of the night.
We're where in you're just Camden like, oh, well, now.
That like nice, you know, white fish couscous, like bean salad thing was really nice, but it didn't quite fill me up, did it? So I'll just go grab a quick pizza or something.
Did your mom had like what, three boys in the house?
Mm-hmm.
That must have been literal, like that fridge must have been getting ran through.
Ravaged every day.
She must have had to go shopping like every other day.
Oh, definitely.
To feed all of you and like cater to your like specific proclivities and shit.
Or it was just like, I don't know, you didn't have, it was the very beginning of like online ordering your shopping. My mom's always been such a massive fan of that, just through having to, I guess, feed three basically adult males. Well, four including my dad, I guess.
Yeah, your dad too, and your little sister who probably was getting the scraps and the leavings, considering there was like four grown men in the house.
Nah, she got whatever she wanted.
No, dude, I think the reason why I'm not like I'm domestic in terms of like decorating, maintaining and cleaning and shit, but when it comes to cooking, like I had a girl boss, single mom, who like never cooked. My mom still to this day thinks cooking is like vulgar and like beneath her. So she just gave us money to buy what we wanted to buy. So I'm like kind of that kind. I have that kind of mentality like imprinted into me. So if I had a kid, I'd probably be like, yeah, here's a tenner. Go get yourself some fucking lunch. But I'll make dinner. Like I'll cook one meal, but I'm not going to cook all the meals. Like that's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's a lot of washing as well.
Yeah, dude. Like when we were at your grandma's house, I was like, trad wives back in the day, like they did, that was like it was a full-time fucking thing to do all the laundry without like even a washing machine. She said that they would have to go to some special place where there were washer boards.
That's my grandma and her like very vivid post-war like childhood memories, sort of thing. That's not been like the majority. That's what the thing about, you know, it's not been the majority of their life, but that was like the extreme hardships that like most of the nation were going through post-war. But that's like ingrained as like, oh well, it was terrible, this life was really like, my entire life was like that. It's like, well, no, you know, first, you know, 10 years were probably like that, but then
you're like, grandma, come on, you're exaggerating a bit there, grandma. But no, I mean like all the stuff, like she's made wedding dresses, she's like knits all this like,
people
cool
a lot more
stuff.
Handy, there was no Amazon, was there, to just order all the things you want at Whimsy. On I don't do that. I've tried to be very good consciously about using Amazon. I don't like it.
I find it weird too.
I think all of the internet shopping, and then everyone complains about the high street's full of American candy shops and like blatant money laundering schemes and stuff. It's like, well, if people shopped on the high street more, there wouldn't be as many people there to do bad things.
The high street has been far more of a fixture of British, not just British, European life than it has been in America. Like that was the big difference I noticed in America, is you would really only have high streets in posh areas. Like I lived in DC, so like the high street, quote unquote, was like Georgetown, but obviously it's like very high end. It's not just like a place you go that has like normal shops or whatever. Most people are going to the mall or to grocery shops. There was no quote unquote high street unless you lived like near major city, blah, blah, blah. And like, whereas in England, there's a high street in every fucking town, every village. And it's like a central gathering point of the community. But yeah, that's no longer really the case. Like high streets are desolate and like shutting down now.
Even like all of the latest internet aesthetic to come around to be the most popular in thing with the back rooms.
Yeah.
And like a lot of that aesthetic is like abandoned shopping malls, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You're not going to get abandoned shopping malls if you don't shop on Amazon. Simple, isn't
Amazon
it?
Amazon is the new back rooms.
Amazon's like done it. It's killed off the high street, and now it's going to start. It started opening up supermarkets.
Oh, yeah.
And then soon.
And hair salons.
The piss take will be, it will come full circle and they'll open a bookshop.
Yep.
And when they've opened a bookshop, you know that you're in a new era, that like the oligarchy that we all make fun of, like, is real and that they have done the next step of the new world order.
We walked past an Amazon hair salon, dude.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're,
in London. Like they have, that was...
they obliterated everyone, taking losses for years to get rid of the high street so they could come in and buy it at a bargain price and do it themselves.
Yeah.
And you got to stop. If everyone just stops buying things off of Amazon,
yeah,
I think we can bring them down.
But I don't know. I feel like there's something kind of quaint and romantic about the high street, and I'm not trying to like romanticize. Okay, maybe I am a little bit, but I guess like when you go to certain places in Amsterdam where they try to keep that old school feel of what a village was like, and you see people in shops actually doing their jobs and their work and taking pride in it, that's like a really nice thing. And like in England especially, it wasn't until like the 70s or 80s where they got rid of like people shopping at greengrocers and butchers and things like that.
The advent of the supermarket.
Yeah, the supermarket came later. So people still had that culture of like going to different places for different things.
Whereas the supermarket is like the dawn of like consumer mentality in America.
Yeah.
Maybe we're wrong. Maybe people would say like in the 50s they did have all of those things.
I don't know when specifically America adopted the whole super mall, super kind of duplex, blah, blah, blah type of thing, and what culture existed like before that, whether they went to butchers and greengrocers. But I remember when I was in Georgetown, D.C., me and my friends wanted to make a pot roast, and I said, oh, we should go down to the butchers. And they looked at me like I was mental, like I had time teleported from some fucking... And we still have butchers here. I mean, people aren't going to get all their meat from butchers, but you can still go to a butcher. Like,
I think it depends on what part of America you're in. Like, in
like you mean the grocery store?
In,
I was like,
In New Jersey, no. They got satrialis, haven't they?
Oh, you know? You can go to
so
the...
So you can go you can and go, get your meats.
You can go get your... Like, Italians... Jewish people, they get it, but like general kind of hyper consumer American culture is still like very much like the mall and the big massive grocery store is like where you go to buy things.
But it's I don't know, it's one of those things where there's probably just as much like sociological research to show that that serves as just as good a function as like breaking down as into individual elements, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'm not even trying to make a lofty argument about it, really. I just, the experience is what I miss. Like, one of our favorite things to do is to go to markets. And London still has a really big culture of markets, which kind of has always been a thing, but it really ramped up during the era of colonialism because all of these goods from the empire started coming into Britain. Mm. So that's why when you go to Camden Market, you still see the weird like Egyptian stall where they're selling all this like Arabian oud. And you feel like you're like step back in time. Like, I do find something really magical about the experience of markets. Like, I love Portobello Market, Camden Market. Like, I love going to markets. And even when we're out in Europe, there are markets everywhere. But I don't think I've ever been to a market in America. I don't think it's like a... Like, they have farmers markets and stuff like... And car boot sales. They call them something different over there. I don't remember.
So a car boot sale is like a very British term.
I don't remember what they call, like the one where Borat bought the doll from the lady and thought that she was a gypsy. That
what do they call it? A yard sale.
A yard sale.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like I've never seen a culture of markets or anything. I wonder if my Americans will scold me about that. But when I lived there, I never really saw
it is. It's
the
like
culture.
It's
like famous markets that people frequent. Like
that's fairly true, I guess. Even from like, I'm trying to rack my brain of like places I've been in America where there have been markets, and I can't really think of any.
There's famous malls.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's this mall called King of Prussia where my friend took me, and I was so scared.
It's like the biggest mall in America or something,
isn't
it? It
was so fucking huge.
Yeah.
I was like, who needs this? Why is it so fucking big? American malls are huge. Like, we think that the little, what's it called that we've got? What are they called?
Shopping center.
No, the what?
Well, Westfield.
Westfield, yeah. We think that Westfield is like this big thing. It really isn't at all. Like, it really, really isn't.
I think Westfield's gaudy and rubbish.
Also, in all the years that I've lived in England, I've never been to Harrods before.
I mean, you'd have to be looking for something pretty specific these days, I think, to get Harrods.
My mom like used to have a lot of stuff from Harrods, and like it sort of fell out of fashion, I think.
My nan used to work at Harrods.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And that's
why.
Did she
get any special perks with that?
I think so, over the years, definitely. But like one cute little tradition that she always had was that she'd bring home a Harrods Christmas bauble.
Oh, wow.
So, like, we had a whole bunch, like, on our Christmas tree every year.
Oh, how fancy. That, like,
these old-timey Harrods Christmas baubles.
Have you been to Harrods before?
Yeah, I think I have. I can't even... I think it was in pursuit of a present for someone. That's the sort of thing you would go to Harrods for. Yeah, unless you are a really fancy, rich motherfucker.
Yeah.
You're not going there on the regular. Like, you're going there to, like, get something special for someone. Yeah. Or, like, you know...
There was that other really famous one that they reopened that was like from the 50s. They reopened it last year in London during Christmas time. And like to get like a hairbrush from there is like £100 or whatever. Like they have these horse hair, like handmade, super ultra posh hairbrushes.
Good for them. It's this thing, isn't it? Of like, I guess, like shifting your mentality from like, oh, I would like a new something because...
It's like
it's old
to buying something expensive.
To buying something that will literally last you the rest of your life.
Yeah, if my grandma had one of those expensive 100-year-old, £100 hairbrushes, I wouldn't mind taking that off her hands if it's something that can be like.
And I think
used
even
again.
There's like early. I can't remember if it was in the Ragged Trousers Philanthropist or if it was sort of like. A different book of around the same time of like the early 20th century, like 1905, 1904, like late 19th century. But they were saying like the plight is that, you know, a worker is not paid enough money to buy himself the
items he produces.
No, the 2 shilling boots,
mm-hmm.
which will last him maybe 5 years
mm-hmm.
if they're made of good leather and all the rest of it. He can only afford the half a shilling boots. And they will only last him 6 months.
Yeah.
So he actually spends...
More money.
Like 10 shillings in 5 years on boots, where actually if he had just had the initial money for the boots in the first place, all this entire consumerist kind of thing is all predicated on people not being able to afford the things that are of good enough quality to last them enough time.
Yeah.
So it's sort of just like, you know, trying to shift...
That's the whole fast fashion and all that stuff. That's who it's aimed towards.
I think people are a little bit more minded that way with the environment and stuff now. Like people are a little bit, if you can afford it as well, right?
But that's the thing. You don't have a choice. You can't choose to consume quote unquote ethically if you can't afford to, which is like the thing. It's the disposable world that we're living in is geared towards like a class of people who can't afford to. Buy things that are high quality and that last, and that's some, and also the fact that the things are like made to go obsolete quickly means that they have to keep consuming, like you said. And I guess that's kind of my sadness with the disappearance of the high street. Like going out actually makes you buy things with intention instead of like mindlessly. Like you want to go, you develop your taste that way. You start getting a feel of the sorts of things that you like and the sorts of things you don't like. You're not just being led by algorithms to things that like fall into a very kind of
niche thing
or broad like spectrum of your taste or whatever. Like it's sad to me. It's sad to me.
I've been getting some really, really niche personal adverts recently.
Like what?
For like miniature, like not Lego, but like adult Lego. Making dioramas of like cute Japanese scenes. And they'll sell you like a set
of like Pokemon inside like an oasis or whatever.
Yeah. Or like, that's you cute. Know, or like of a Japanese coffee shop at midnight or whatever. And then you make
so
like
basically
the
lo-fi hip hop beats to chill and study to, but like in a diorama.
Yeah.
What a useless fucking...
I know, it's totally useless.
You're the but one talking about the environment and
but
all
it's
this bullshit.
It's the exact sort of thing where it's just sort of like, if you're like, just been paid or whatever, or you're just like, fuck it, I want to buy something to be as a project, or you were like in that frame of mind or something. Bang, that's £100. You've just been fucking algorithmed out of. Like, easy peasy.
You've been talking about getting us a fish. Now that we're in our new apartment as well.
I have thought about the fish. I have thought about the fish for a
but we
hot
also
second.
Have a cat. So that's kind of the dilemma.
It is. And I'm trying to have, you know, cognitive conversations with Naboo in the spirit realm.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
To confer with him whether he's going to be able to be trusted with, around a fish or not, or if he's going to be fishing every day that we're not in the flat.
You're asking him to go against his nature, Jake. He's a cat. Of course he's so, going to try to
He's so zonked out anytime he's here. Like, he's just chilling and sleeping with his face, like, buried in the cover or buried in his own paws.
Oh, bless him. It's because it's getting close to winter, so he's in like hibernation mode at the
moment. It's all rainy, so he gets grumpy that he can't go outside and then looks at me like, what? Why is it raining?
Fish. I want to call him Emilio.
Emilio.
Yeah, Emilio the fish, like in Kill Bill.
Cute.
But I'm kind of traumatized because I had a fish called Gary when I was little. And because my mom is like a Nigerian mom that disapproved of pets, a fish was all I was allowed to have. And like Gary was my best friend, but then I forgot to feed him a couple times and he died.
Oh dear.
So like, I'm like kind of scared to get this fish because I feel like I'll have to take care of it. And because you work so much more, you're gone. So I know the responsibility is going to fall on me to
pop a bit of fish food in the tank on my way out. Bang. It's not rocket science.
But you got to give him love as well.
No, they don't like it when you're, like, pressing up against the glass and shit. Evan, you didn't find a Nemo.
You think that I'm that girl from Finding Nemo?
That's your, like, level of tact around animals.
That's not true. I'm loving
you. You are much better now. That was maybe your initial approach to animals.
That's because I wasn't allowed to have pets as a kid. So I'm like, Naboo is what taught me how to... I nearly said learned me like a hillbilly, sorry. Naboo is who taught me how to love pets and like how to take care of animals and stuff. He was my first official pet, basically. Aww. So yeah, like, and I really do want us to get a dog eventually as well. I think that would be really sweet.
If I got a Shiba Inu, you better get prepared to be just like ignored for a month.
Oh my god, you would get a meme dog. Like, it's just like such a you thing to do. Apparently
everyone's getting Shiba Inus and they look so cute.
Oh,
I want
god,
one.
No, I want to get like a Paris Hilton princess dog because I was denied having a pet when I was little. So my inner girl, my inner child wants like a princess, like
a little chihuahua. Yeah. Or I would settle for a Pomeranian because they're so fluffy and cute.
That's what I'm saying, is like if I get like a Paris Hilton dog, you'll feel like emasculated when you have to like walk it around and
nah,
stuff.
Nah, it's fine. It's not a chihuahua because they're too skinny and small.
But they're
a Pomeranian is so fluffy, so I allow that.
Either way, I just want like a little tiny dog that can be my like baby.
Oh, bless.
For a while. But yeah, we should talk about the big titty teacher.
Oh my God. I couldn't believe what I saw with my very eyes.
Yeah.
It's literally just like a... Were they a primary school teacher?
It looked like primary school. I think it was a primary school.
They were what I think I heard on the Tim Dillon show that they were a, what do you call it, metal shop or a workshop teacher,
yeah,
or whatever. That's
but it was like in primary school though, I think.
Oh, okay. You don't do that in the UK in primary school.
No, you do that in secondary school.
But I mean, a teacher wearing a large pair of comedy breasts is something to behold. It was sort of... I mean, the nipples are what gets me every time when I look at that picture.
Oh my god.
And I feel like everyone's done the rounds on this and
yeah,
stuff. So there's
the
not
discourse
too much...
has been silly to behold. And like, I don't understand why. Like, it's obviously instinctively inappropriate. And anyone who says otherwise is like either being purposefully a contrarian or they're like really a sick person themselves. But like, even if one's to make the argument that this person identifies as trans, like cis women have to comport themselves and dress a certain way in fucking professional environments. Like if I went to a school with a tight top on and my nipples like protruding, they would be right to be like, hey, maybe wear a bra to school. You know,
oh my God.
Like it's just even as a woman, you understand that your body sends certain signals out to the world.
It was Halloween. She got mixed up and she got Halloween wrong and it was on the wrong date and she went as Miss Chokes on Dick from South Park. That's what everyone's not getting.
That was the gag. I don't know. It was weird. And also the fact that the school stuck their neck out for this person as well. Like, really was shocking and horrifying to see, and it just shows how much bullshit gets like excused under the umbrella of like this whole trans ideology thing. And like, I tend to avoid the trans debate because the TRAs themselves are unhinged and mean and horrible. But then also, I don't consider myself a radical feminist either. And I don't want those people to cluster around me thinking that I'm one of them. Because like, just because I agree on basic issues of biology with you doesn't mean that like we're comrades. Like, I probably have a ton of political disagreements with you. You probably have like Ukraine flag in your bio just because you like understand that like sex is the dimorphism of sex doesn't necessarily mean that we're friends. And that's how it tends to be in the discourse. If you agree with one person on one thing, you all of a sudden are lumped into their camp and category or whatever. And like, especially around like hot button shit like this, which is why I kind of like avoid it, because I don't want to be pushed onto anyone's side or whatever the fuck, even though I have my own convictions. And yeah, it's wrong, and this person is clearly a sick person, probably someone who's like an autogynephile who's getting off in front of children, and the fact that they're allowed to like hide behind this is concerning. Like, it was disturbing to see.
They're probably they must be titillated by the idea of them distracting young boys with
that's
their
disgusting
gargantuan comedy breasts.
That's horrible. That's fucking horrible, dude. Imagine if you're the parent of a kid in that fucking class.
Oh, I mean,
that's like real disturbing.
It's so funny until you actually do try and put yourself in a situation like
where that's your fucking kid.
It's actually like your kid's teacher or something. It's like, what would you do in a situation like that? Like, I don't know. That is pretty weird. You would, but then there's so much social pressures, isn't it? It's all the social pressures that come around to sort of making
stuff like
this acceptable.
But that's what the whole thing is. It's all about, it's social pressure, and that it just shows you the power of social pressure.
You wouldn't want to be the first parent that complained about this teacher. Because otherwise you might be seen as like...
Oh, I would. You know. Trust me, I wouldn't give a shit. I'd be the first parent to fucking like... Maybe I have some like level of like autism that prevents me from being like super pressured by social cues or whatever the fuck. But like, I don't give a shit about any of that.
It's kind of like...
Never have.
It's kind of like... I don't know.
Especially when it comes to your child, like, you want to fucking protect your... That's, like, an instinctual thing.
It's like...
And that's why you see that article that came out a week ago where they were like, oh, the maternal instinct is a hoax or whatever. It's fake. It's a bit tool of the patriarchy. That's fucking bullshit.
It's like using the cover of, you know, something protected or whatever in society as, like, a taboo to go against.
Yeah.
As a way of sort of using power. So like the only way I can like formulate an equivalent thing would be like if there's a big meeting at the work and the boss comes in totally naked, but like does the meeting as normal.
And it's like, what?
And everyone is going to continue the meeting as normal.
Yep. Otherwise you're gonna get fired.
No, what, like, that's what the kind of comparison makes.
Yeah,
me
because
she's not a boss, she's just a teacher, she's in a vulnerable situation. Yeah, but it's like she's using this thing to like mask, and the boss's protection is that he's the boss. That's his authority, that's his power. It's like a way of trying to replicate that
type of
authority,
yeah,
in a different social situation.
It's a power
so
thing.
That you can do something outlandish. And
it's a power thing, and it's a narcissism thing as well, massively a narcissism thing.
It's like
it
can only really be one thing,
attention.
Which is like how far
it's antisocial.
How far can I push the boundary?
But that is antisocial. That is like that's like the thought process of a person who's antisocial. People who are antisocial don't care about boundaries or societal rules or rules of politeness, or they just want attention by any means necessary and to like enact their will. And like the reason why people are upset about this is because it's antisocial behavior being normalized under the umbrella of progress and social whatever the fuck. Like, it's like, it's sad and it's scary. And yeah, a lot of like the sort of social justice edicts of the left are used to like shroud antisocial behavior. Like, yeah, people abuse power all the time, sure, but like what Len's power and legitimacy is now like changing. So there's going to be a lot of antisocial people who are attracted to being victimized or marginalized or whatever, because it's a perfect moral cover for their antisocial shit. Ezra Miller is an example.
I'd say it's the same thing as we talked about a little bit on the Low Res episode that we were last on. What was it, The People's Joker?
Oh, yeah.
Where these people went off and made, like, a copyrighted, The Joker.
Yeah.
Like, a massively copyrighted DC Comics, Warner Bros., whatever the fuck
yeah.
thing. And had a trans Joker
yeah.
as the main thing. And that actually got into a festival.
Yeah.
Why did it get into the festival?
Yeah.
And it's the same topic yeah. of conversation.
Yeah.
Because, like, someone at the festival probably
is mates with Tim Heidecker.
No, okay.
Tim
Heidecker
is like a fucking producer, and
I'm not going on some glowy.
He's also doing the Channel 5 January 6th documentary.
Okay, I'm not going on some glowy fucking connect the dots, like, you know, mad fucking
old school Glenn
thing here.
I've got my conspiracy whiteboard behind me.
What I'm saying is, it's probably the social pressure.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
you don't want to be seen as transphobic.
This is like a brave movie. It's trying to do something fucking
cutting edge, et cetera.
Yeah. And you should overlook the other stuff. Yeah. It's just this festival. It's not getting wide release, so we can't get in that much trouble, et cetera, et cetera.
It's a way of enacting power, negotiating status, and that's what antisocial people are primarily preoccupied with: is power and status and how to get it by any means necessary. And, like, this is the perfect fucking avenue. And we see examples of it all the time. Jesse Smollett, Ezra Miller, even Will Smith slapping people. Amber fucking Heard. Antisocial motherfuckers. Like, it's just story after story after story of, like, antisocial people abusing these, like, haphazard social justice edicts in order to gain power, to gain status, to gain sympathy, and all of these different things. And we're just supposed to sit here and take it. And then people on the other side, because they're not necessarily as clued in about human dynamics, they just see it as like degeneracy of this, a certain type of person or this or that. And that's like not the whole truth. Like, antisocial people are shapeshifters. They'll do whatever the fuck they have to do, morph themselves into whatever form they have to morph themselves into in order to have proximity to some kind of power.
Or just get whatever they
want. Yeah, or whatever they want.
It's pretty crazy. I think people are kind of wising up to the sort of like the People's Joker and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think people bought that that it was going to be a good film anyway.
No, of course, yeah.
Like, even from the trailer or anything, like, there's no way that and it sort of got talked about that it's sort of cynical to try and like use that as a way of getting your film into whatever or you know. And if it was like a good film, you probably could have made something that wasn't the Joker and made the film, right? But it wasn't.
Nope.
Because you're using all these things as a way to, like, leverage fucking bullshit.
You see it all the time. Wasn't there that woman recently who made some special sauce that went viral on TikTok and then tried to market it, and then it turns out she didn't FDA approve it, and it was just, like, disgusting.
The pink sauce lady.
Yeah, the pink sauce lady. And then when criticized about her haphazard business endeavor, she started trying to, I'm a black business owner,
yeah,
and this and that, and it's like, dude, no,
we don't use the FDA,
like, no. It's just disturbing. It's real fucking disturbing. But like I said, it's antisocial people usually that, like, use this shit as, like, a moral cover for their fucking antisocial shit, and it's the easiest, most, like, feasible way to do that these days. But, like, speaking of our obsession with antisocial behavior in society, the Jeffrey Dahmer show is out on Netflix. I tried to watch the first episode and I couldn't. Everyone will make fun of me, but I'm a sensitive bear.
Oh, bless.
And I don't like violence. And the thing is, cartoon violence is fine. Like, I can watch a Tarantino film and not feel anything. Like, I can watch, like, cartoonish violence, but, like, when it comes to, like, visceral shit, it does bother me. And I feel like I'm in a minority in that regard because people are so desensitized to it. And not just that, the true crime craze as well. True crime is one of the most lucrative successful genres in podcasting on YouTube, if you're somebody who's engaging, even slightly engaging, slightly good looking, and you read a Wikipedia true crime fucking story that you found, you'll get fucking millions of views, dude. We should just quit and make it happen that way.
I'm not good looking enough.
Of course you are, my handsome bear. What was I saying? It's crazy to me how the obsession with true crime has sort of spiraled out of control. And I kind of wonder why that is. I don't want to do like some haphazard psychoanalysis. I'm just genuinely interested.
Yeah, I think that it's
we were just talking about antisocial behavior being normalized through these like altruistic channels. And then there's also this cultural obsession with antisocial behavior and antisocial people, the most antisocial people, serial killers. Why is there this like even the TikToks, like when you scroll through TikTok and like people are talking about Jeffrey, they're talking about him almost as if he's their friend with sympathy, like they're fans of his, like they're fan. And I mean, this phenomenon has been going on for a very long time.
What people didn't know about Jeffrey is that he was a really tortured soul.
Yeah, literally.
He's getting a lot of bad press and a lot of bad rap.
He doesn't feel anything, which is the thing that annoys me about the people who fanboy after antisocial people. They're not the same as you and I. They literally don't feel anything, which is why they do what they do. You can't understand that as like an emotional being, but some people are not built that way.
I'm disappointed because I heard or read somewhere, I thought that amongst all of these new Jeffrey, because there's quite a few new Jeffrey, like they seem to have gone in cycles.
Yeah.
Where they did a whole bunch on Richard Ramirez. And yeah. I don't know if it's like all the streaming companies trying to compete with each other.
Well,
it's like,
you're doing one
on that, so we need to do one on
but
that.
They know that there's an obsession with true crime in the culture right now. Like they're following.
No, but just as to the volume of them, that's why so many are done. I don't think it's just from that perspective. I think there's some amount of like, oh, well, because they made this one, we have to have one that's on our service so that people don't feel like they're missing out on like a juicy Dharma fucking thing or a Richard Ramirez
one. I'm sure that plays a role, but I mean, the reason why they're even being made like hotcakes in the first place is because there's a high demand for them.
But my original point was I read that My Friend Dharma was going to be made into a series.
The comic book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I fucking adore Durf Back Durf, the writer of that comic book. And he's got a new one that I haven't read, but I've read all of the stuff he's ever done. And that was a really compelling story. And like really,
I couldn't read it.
Well, it's interesting.
You gave it to me before we started dating.
It's interesting because it's not like Dharma as the main character in a lot of ways. It's told like with him as the sort of background figure.
Yeah.
And to this guy's childhood and like adolescence in high school.
Yeah.
Which is like a really interesting way to sort of like show the early life and the sort of things that then became all of the sick shit in his head that went on to do all that fucked up
but
stuff.
But even then, the obsession.
But that's doing it without sort of going into the gory detail and like, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It's sort of like,
adaptation.
It's doing it in this like interesting sort of like, not psychoanalyzing way, but in this way of like, hey, look, these were the implants. These were the things that were the seeds that went off to then
create
make the monster.
This monster,
which is actually the thing that I think is what people were after when they're looking for that
so
true crime stuff.
So you think people
are
attempting to understand the mind of the antisocial person.
Definitely. It's like, why are they like that? How could someone do something
like
that?
I think it's gone beyond that, because the reason I couldn't really watch this Brian Murphy adaptation is because it was quite invested in the viscera of the actual crimes themselves. So
well, exactly.
I think it's gone beyond. I think the obsession with true crime has gone beyond the sort of titillating mental desire to try to understand the mind of somebody who's so different, so vastly different from the average human being. Now it's like gotten into the territory of like voyeuristic pleasure almost.
The other ones that I guess I'm not like one of those people that watches loads of true crime. But there are certainly ones that I watch which are captivating, and you can understand why they're captivating.
Yeah.
And so, like, Tiger King, I would say, is one.
Yeah.
Super fucking captivating.
Yeah, but I would
say
that's true crime.
Absolutely
per se.
Was.
I mean,
are you kidding me?
But
it's kind of like an unsolved, like, missing person / murder, potentially.
Yeah,
like, there's all of this, like, fucking exotic animals, laws,
but I'm
fucking
in terms
cases
of, like,
and shit.
Really grisly true crime documentaries of people being murdered and raped.
So then the other ones that I would say have been really compelling that I've followed and watched, both podcasts and TV series. Podcast was that original journalist for Jeffrey Epstein case, telling like the chronological story of the entire thing, of like when she was contacted, from like when it all blew up again in like, you know, the last few years and stuff.
Yeah,
that was fucking fascinating. And that's fascinating because it's this kind of mysterious case where you don't really get the full picture in any way, so to have someone that was really actually involved with it fucking lay it out
really
from beginning
truly,
to end
be real
was really interesting.
It's entertainment at the end of the day, and people
who
watch
stories.
But that's what I'm saying, it's their stories, yes, but the thing is, people who watch true crime a lot of the time are like really oblivious to the idea that they're consuming entertainment. They think that they're like helping or participating in some fucking way, or that they're informing themselves, or it's educational in some way. Like, you know, there's a very small percentage of people who are antisocial. So meaning
it's because
sociopaths, psychopaths. I mean, sociopaths are probably more common than psychopaths, but like if we're talking about actual psychopathy, it's not like a lot of people. We wouldn't be able to function as a society if everyone was a psychopath.
And the likelihood
of you running into one of those people is rare. And also a lot of people who are psychopathic don't actually kill people. They're like bankers. And
so there's been another interesting show about true crime. And this whole fascination with true crime and everything like that as well. It's a comedy series with Steve Martin and Selena Gomez,
mm-hmm.
where then they are avid fans of this thing. They all live in the same building in New York, and then they all then witness or, you know,
a murder.
And then they make a podcast about their experience with
murder.
That's
dark, dude. That's fucking dark, dude.
Yeah, but it's also quite funny.
Dark.
It's also pretty good.
It's our shadow. It's the shadow of society. There's something about us that enjoys voyeuristically consuming.
I don't think it's that. I think what I was trying to say is that they, and because they get wrapped up into themselves and they want to then try and solve this murder that they witnessed and all this stuff. And what I think it is this like this sort of like LA Noir era sort of like detective image is like this very powerful archetype
collective unconscious.
Yeah, and that like actually like especially when the world feels so fucked up and so crazy.
Yeah,
like you want
to
kind
be the
of
one
figure
that
out.
Saves it.
Yeah, you want yeah not you be
you
the one that saves
out
it. That's too.
You
want to
figure
too,
out the puzzle.
That's too grand. Figuring out a way to save the world, that's too big. But what you can do is find this mystery that no one's found, mm-hmm. and then piece together this information mm-hmm. that everyone
it's
overlooked.
It's a sense of power and agency, basically.
Exactly,
yeah.
So it's not like this horrible... I like to have faith in humanity.
You're saying that it's not necessarily coming from a horrible impulse, which could be true, but I also think that part of it, it's like a both. I think both are true. I think part of it is coming from that desire for agency, but I think part of it is also dark. And I remember when I was young, I was like obsessed with the film Chicago, the film version of the musical, and I didn't really get the subtext. I just thought it was about cool murder ladies and like a media scandal or whatever. But I recently rewatched it and kind of actually finally got what it was about. And in that film, the protagonist murders her lover because he decides he doesn't want to shtup her anymore, and she's hauled off to jail. Because she's beautiful, she's able to attract the attention of this like very famous lawyer, who then sort of creates a media spectacle around her as this wronged victim. And, you know, there's like rivalries going on. And it's the reason I'm bringing it up is because it kind of reminded me the spectacle that surrounded her, the way people devoured murderesses as these sorts of icons of dark femininity. This was actually like a real phenomenon in the 50s, especially in states that had the death penalty. The idea of women in jail and women suffering a fate as terrible as hanging was titillating to the public.
Mm.
And they became like mini celebrities almost. And that was sort of the inspiration for that musical. And yeah, there is an aspect of our consciousness that enjoys consuming these stories because it gives us a sense of agency, moral agency, but also because like we are interested in like the criminal mind. We're interested in like the antisocial mind. I think there's part of us that even idolizes the idea of one who lives outside of the confines of restraint.
Definitely. And that's why I was about to bring up like something like Natural Born Killers, like explores a lot of this stuff. and the themes that we're talking about.
Yeah, massively.
With sort of the worship of antisocial figures.
That's
and that
American
kind of thing.
Culture and, in a nutshell.
Well, he was definitely making that point, but yeah. At the same time, he was. It's sort of like, it's the idea, I think, that we would all be Mickey and Mallory on a bad day.
Yeah.
And that if you, like, if my boss had just said that, or if he just said that on the day where I'd also, you know, had trouble at home or whatever mm-hmm. else, then I could have just fucking gone
killed
like that
him.
And taken my woman and gone off and we could have fucking done this. Like, that is like...
Yeah, the American...
not even American, I don't think. I think that's like a human fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's not really a fantasy, it's more of a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's a fantasy to you because it's an escape from all your problems. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is this idea of, like, a pirate's life mm-hmm. or, like, this sort of thing. And that's, you know, again, a pirate. Is mm-hmm. like these people I'm guilty of worshipping even in the modern day with
typical Sagittarius,
you know, like is the people that will go against it and do their own thing.
Yeah,
regardless, yeah. You're I'm always guilty of rooting for them and like go for it, man.
Yeah,
fucking
yeah.
Yeah. Like you escaped the fucking
system.
You escaped the matrix.
The confines of morality.
Yeah,
confines of societal expectations. But the thing is, those things
you
are...
You got your boat to the fucking other side. You opened Truman's fucking world, man.
It's a juvenile
world,
fantasy because all of those constraining things, even though sometimes they manifest oppressively... And we should redress that. Those are the things that make society function. You do have to abide by some form of social contract. And although the beast in us wants to cast all of that off, we can't have society if we don't. When you're talking about antisocial people, they don't care about any of that shit. And I think part of us feels restrained by those things, but we're also comforted by them at the same time, which is why we're not antisocial. But antisocial people find no comfort in those limiting aspects on human nature. They just want to do as they will. And yeah, there is something that we unconsciously find heroic about that, which is why we deify them. And like now, serial killers are no longer the thing that they were, even though they've sort of come back into the zeitgeist through pop culture. We don't see that as much as we see mass shootings, which is the sort of new evolution of the antisocial behavior manifesting itself in society. Like since Columbine, that's been the sort of form that antisocial youth and also men have taken. And yeah, that's an even more even vastly more destructive way of getting out one's antisocial impulses. And yeah, it's disturbing how that's like evolved.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, I don't know, that's what I think. It's not just that I have, like, a bad place in humanity. It is from, like, a wanting of escape, and that manifests in, like, this thing that is, like, this twisted,
well,
twisted
I mean,
reality.
People always ask, why do serial killers no longer exist? And there are a myriad of reasons, like, surveillance has increased since like
well arguably
that period as well.
Serial killers no longer exist because they existed before, like that very concept is why
it started
so
with
many
Jack the Ripper
not only that but like why has so many movies in pop culture
yeah.
revolved around that kind of idea, because it's powerful and
mm-hmm.
it's fucking terrifying
mm-hmm.
and it was the realization
of
that
a human
some
monster
well yeah but it was the realization that the world that we live in is actually totally caters for someone like that
mm-hmm.
to exist
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so police, like in America, for example, I don't like, there's less about it talked as much in the UK. Like, you had the odd one and this and that, and then you always learn about another one that had like a 20 kill streak or something. Like, God, the fuck, no one ever talked about that motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of an American thing. But like in America, after fucking, what was his name? The one that was Zac Efron as the film,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Bundy.
Bundy, yeah.
After Bundy, because he was like one of the earlier ones, like,
mm-hmm.
they fucking started unifying the police data and stuff like that, because
mm-hmm.
they realized someone could go from one county in
mm-hmm.
a state or one in some states, or even from one state to another, and it not be that much distance.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have no fucking idea who this guy is and have no record on him whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And there were stories I've heard about in England like that as well, where like someone's, you know, knocked up this lady and had a family and then not been happy and then like gone to literally two villages over and no one knows them and no one knows them and they have a whole new life, because that's how small the fucking world was before
culture and all of this stuff that we have now. It's impossible to like do that sort of thing. And people theorize that maybe the reason that there's less serial killers now is because the FBI is able to trace psychological profiles and catch them before they, I don't know how fucking true that is.
Some Philip K. Dick
precog crime thing. Society is always going to have a certain subset of antisocial people, and I guess the interesting question is, what do we do about that? I'm quite draconian in my view of how it should be dealt with.
What's that?
I don't know. But I don't think that they should be allowed to have liberty or any sort of freedom at all. Like, if there was a way that we could detect them and put them somewhere, I would like.
This is a slippery slope, isn't it? This is a very slippery slope.
Well, I mean, somebody who has no empathy. That's somebody who's capable of anything. But then again, people are like, you can't get rid of them because some of them are surgeons. Like, there are certain high functioning psychopaths and sociopaths. But I don't know how true that myth is. If you don't have empathy, how high functioning can you
probably
truly
spread
be?
By a psychopath to save all of them?
How much self-control can you truly have? Or maybe they do. Maybe some do. It's hard to tell.
If you go down the road of, why can't we start scanning people for traits?
Yeah, I know.
Do you know
that's
what I mean?
True.
That becomes a very slippery slope.
That is true.
And so all it takes is the wrong person to be in control.
But then look at how bad the world is when we don't do that, and antisocial people are basically able to maneuver their way to the top of any hierarchy through all these different means that are now available to them.
And I think
probably more so than ever now with the advent of the internet.
If you're also looking and starting to make major decisions around like scanning people for certain traits and all that kind of thing in the seek and like of essentially like an efficient society or like a perfect society or a utopia or something,
what I'm saying is if we lived in a perfect society, what we would have
that
is,
wouldn't be the first thing you'd start thinking about. There would be a lot of other things you start thinking about before you start scanning motherfuckers for certain like biological brain traits or something.
If we were able to if we had a society where it's antisocial traits were disincentivized and stigmatized more, then those people would naturally stick out and be pariahs. Whereas what we have now is a society that incentivizes and encourages antisocial behavior and antisocial traits. And then it's like, oh my God, freaks out, panics when people start like dick worshipping serial killers and there's a mass shooting every fucking 2 weeks.
Yeah,
like,
but then
that's
also
what you get.
But then why is it geared towards antisocial stuff? Because that's where the fucking money is.
Yeah.
Because, and it's the same thing on like social media algorithms, right? Why are they all tuned to try and piss you off?
Yeah.
Make you angry.
Yeah.
Because in that kind of state of mind, you're more willing to make irrational purchases or do anything like that, succumb to other advertisements and other stuff like that that they're then going to show you.
Yeah.
Following all of the curated fucking posts to make you feel all nice and pissed off and angry about the world.
Yeah.
So like that's kind of, that's where the science leads them.
Yeah.
It leads them to how do we get more people to do more clicks, to do this, to do that.
Yeah.
It's by encouraging all of the bad aspects of their thing.
Yeah.
If there was something that encouraged all the good aspects of society, they probably wouldn't spend that much time on it.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend doing something that's good for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's but like even brushing then, your teeth, man. Or like whatever, eating vegetables, right? Like if something was, or like anything that would be deemed as like good is essentially somewhat of a chore in like humanity or like your psyche in some way. Or maybe that's maybe all the Japanese people listening to me would be shaking their head and we go, oh. But like, no, am I wrong?
I know what you mean. Like,
doing the good thing is most often than not.
It's do the rubbish thing now so that you can have a good thing in future.
Yeah, doing the good thing is.
So it's not instant gratification, basically.
Yeah, it's more often than not, like, not something that you're going to enjoy right now, but it's something that's going to be beneficial for you
in the long run.
In the long run. So, like, if Facebook was really, like, wholesome and encouraged all these amazing aspects of humanity and really connected us in all these positive ways, then you wouldn't spend as much time on it because it would feel like a fucking chore.
Exactly. Because it would require you actually engaging your empathy, engaging your emotions,
all the shit
that people avoid through instant gratification.
We are
becoming more antisocial, which is probably why this paradigm is what kind of reigns supreme and is like the most celebrated cultural enclave at the moment.
But I was saying, I've seen a push definitely for more analog fucking lifestyle, bro. For that sweet mid-2000s lifestyle.
It's all cope.
For that sweet mid-2000s lifestyle.
Like, I'm gonna get a flip phone and I'll be all good.
Pre-iPhone lifestyle. Trust me, there's been a yearning for it. I've been reading a lot, not just like back to Y2K, but it's more of a like pre-social media, pre-whatever. Yeah. Internet was more of a fun place. Like, sure, that might sound nostalgic.
I mean, the antisocial drives of culture were just as, those engines were turning just as fast during that era. It just hadn't reached the sort of point that we're at yet. But like in the 90s, Fight Club explored that. No,
it allowed for the loosening of a lot of stuff. Because you would
Woodstock
have to...
Woodstock 99 was an example of that. Fucking would, Columbine was an example of that.
But you would have to... So, for example, advertising and the bombardment that you have of, like, negative media and imagery and all of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There were, like, pretty fucking strict rules that were set out of what you could and couldn't broadcast.
Yeah.
So there was a massive limitation as to what people were actually exposed to.
But... Dude, we grew up watching adverts that like basically made us want to like fucking scratch our eyeballs out unless our parents got us like the new toy. Like literally most of the cartoons we love were excuses to sell toys.
Toys schmoys. It was like always gonna
like,
die, wasn't
no
it?
Dream time like, before full time. All of it was leading up to the very moment that we're in. We've been conditioned as consumers since we were small.
Hey man, I'll take some toy adverts over what the fucking hellscape we're in now. That seems like a paradise. Are you kidding me? Like if all I had to deal with was a fucking toy advert.
No,
fuck me,
dude. Think about it. All the cartoons were literally made for the express purpose of how they could be marketed to children.
They were always
as
made
toys
from
that
Matt
are now
Angie.
In a landfill somewhere.
Transformers, all of that. That was all
Pokemon
on toys.
Was so that you would scream and cry until your parents fucking
until
bought
you collected
the
them all. Okay, that's
like,
what
that's
those
like
shows
what
were for. Okay, but I'm not disputing
so, like,
that. But what I'm saying,
you know, it's just a new evolution.
No,
of it.
Is the connection we have with media, streaming, the streaming wars, the fact that people are making so much stuff.
Yeah,
everyone's oversaturated.
Yeah,
and like you can't really fucking connect with something.
Yeah.
When it's so disposable.
Yeah.
And like I can see people waking up to that fact. That's all I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that Blockbuster's coming back anytime soon or that fucking people are going to be getting iPod classics back in droves, but it's, you know, people are going to be getting them back a little bit and like
but
they're
going to be like locked up by a lot of money.
Well, I've still got mine. I just need to get it repaired. So
that's
like,
what I'm saying. It's going to become
sucks
this
to
new...
Sucks to be you if you didn't keep your old
physical
iPod.
Physical media is going to end up becoming this new kind of boutique hipster culture that's only for the very wealthy who want to have their little collection, like in Children of Men, that has like the collection of art at the end of the world.
No,
that's
I don't.
Literally, what it's going to end up.
I don't
becoming.
Think so. I think that it's going to be, you know, unfortunately, you've got people that operate in the base layer that watch things like Gogglebox and whatever,
like, oh,
and will just, you know,
up.
Be like, oh, whatever, I don't care. Like, you know, not very cultured people, they will still be doing stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like the then. Next level above that onwards we'll be like no actually that isn't good for you, it's not good for your brain, like all the social media stuff, all of the streaming of all everything that we
I don't
do
think that's ever
is not
happen.
Actually good for your connection with fucking what makes life and everything. It's
no
not,
I
it's
think
not
that
wholesome.
I think it's basically
we're gonna
like
switch
you said,
off
convenience is what's like the leading thing at the moment. And people are going to choose convenience over fucking
only the
ethics at this point.
Only the, you know.
We've been conditioned to.
Only super uncultured people will be.
Like we were just complaining.
Everyone else will
all the high
switch
culture,
off.
The elves.
Everyone will switch off.
Not the hobbits. The elves will be the ones collecting like $3,000 vinyls and like Blu-rays and shit. And shopping at quaint little markets and high streets.
No, babe.
Trying to live their little like fantasy
the fact
Y2K.
Is, the fact is bullshit, that those
while
things.
While everyone else is forced to shop on like Amazon and
the
like,
fact is that those things.
Stream
those
everything.
Those things is the
like
healthiest
the whole,
way to have society.
It's
do you know what I mean?
You will own nothing and be happy ethos that the WEF has been yelling out. That's the future. We were just talking about the high street and physical media and all of those different things, like, that's the world that they're pushing to. Only the rich will be able to own even a DVD. And you already see it with, like, how expensive that they're becoming, how expensive. You think because it's an obsolete format that that would reduce the value of it. But no, like, those physical media now is so fucking valuable because everything is moving to the digital realm where you own nothing. And that's kind of the model that society is going to be running
that's
on. Soon.
That's streaming, that's everything.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people, you know, are... people will always choose the convenience over whatever, but I think that there is going to be a point where, you know, the streaming royalties and all of that stuff, if they really want to keep it and the movement to switch off and turn off from those streaming services continues,
mm-hmm.
then, like...
I don't think that's going to happen. Okay.
I would like to see it happen. This is my vision and my dream. Don't stifle my vision and my dream.
I'm sorry. Okay. I don't mean
if enough people start to switch off of those services, that they will then start to try and readdress all the other things that they could address today if they wanted to. Like the royalty payout, everything that goes on with artists and all the other stuff behind the scenes. That I guess you only really give a shit about if you're an artist. But at the same day... You hear people apparently do care about that stuff. But then if you do, then why don't you buy the fucking thing on Bandcamp, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not on Spotify. Like, yeah, it's not. It's somewhere else and you've got to get it.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, it's going to wholly go back to like the...
consumers that, like, again... All
no,
the toys,
I think
all the fucking cartoons we watch were meant to sell us toys. Like, we're literally...
I think this whole 20-year period... Or maybe up to 30 years. Maybe it'll extend to 2030 and we'll finally figure shit out then. But this whole early 21st century shit is going to be laughable by the end of the century.
Well, if there
and
is
And what
an
we're
end
doing now
century.
Feels like completely primitive into what it will then hopefully be. And we'll kind of snap out of all the bullshit that we've been doing.
It depends on if there is an end of the century, considering the fact that there have been rumors of war flying around and horrible things about bombs... for the last couple of weeks. It literally freaks me out because I know that Putin said that, like, he would try to hit the UK first or whatever, which I think is unfair because I didn't do anything wrong. Like, I'm not in favor of any of this shit. But, like, for the last week, I've been, like, paranoid, and every time I hear, like, a car go past our window, I think it's, like, the end or whatever.
You need to get a grip, love. You need to get a grip and calm yourself down.
It's happening. I mean, I don't know. It sounds pretty fucking scary.
They're just gassing, mate. They're just seeing how far they can push the buttons before someone really does something, I think. And this might be the prelude to it. But maybe next year will be when World War is, when, like...
But I don't want to die.
Well, maybe we won't die. You know, you got to roll the dice. These things.
Is that what you're saying?
You know, these are all things that are, like, so beyond, like, anyone's fucking control.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, like, it's pointless getting worried about it, doing whatever. Like, I'm probably not going to get conscripted... You know,
I smoke too much weed anyway.
If I do, like, we'll get on the first flight to Nigeria.
I'm glad you're on board with that shit now.
Because I'm not fighting in a fucking war. Because not to be a dickhead, not to say like you can go and do that, mate, but not for me, thank you. Like, I appreciate like all the freedoms and all that stuff that everyone enjoys now because of. Sacrifices that people made in like World War II and stuff like that. I get that, but at the same time, I don't really agree with it. I don't agree that, you know, working class people should be fucking made to go and kill each other or be fodder for the decisions of the elites. And yeah. I know that's everyday life, but it's a little bit more stark and in your face when it's like hundreds of millions of people potentially getting killed in the flash of an eye.
I just can't believe that humanity is at this point, like, still. That's the thing that I find. I don't even want to get into the inertia of it. Like, the bigger picture aspects of it are what has been, like, I guess, haunting me this week is the fact that we're really, like, here again. Like, come on, man.
Putin needs to get his dick sucked and he needs to calm the fuck down.
West needs to get their fucking dick sucked and they need to calm the fuck down. The West is the one who's fucking instigated this whole shit.
They are, but they're also not the ones.
And they seem to want to bring everyone to the brink of fucking disaster for like reasons that are still unclear. Wasn't it 10 years ago or whatever when Obama literally said that Ukraine doesn't have special interest to America?
Well,
so what the fuck changed?
That's because he didn't know about the fucking Stargate that's in Ukraine that we have to go there to control.
Who's behind the Stargate?
The fucking ancient Ukrainians, or like the ancient Slavic people that were contacted by aliens or some shit,
oh my God.
Were given like a portal back to their fucking world. Dude, that's what the one theory is about the fucking war in Iraq and fucking Afghanistan shit.
And didn't it have something to do with the Yazidis? That,
yeah,
like,
but this whole... like ancient fucking like Mesopotamian tribe or whatever that are basically similar thing with the Dogon, where like a whole bunch of their culture and like rituals and stuff in that region is about these people coming down and fucking giving them all this information,
yeah,
and setting them up with this fucking Stargate
thing. So there's
thing.
Like a theory,
and then
that...
like someone clearly in America, some scholar or whatever, had only then found out about this information or like had it validated like in the early 2000s, and then they fucking bada bing bada boom.
So Jake thinks
go
that
there
this is
to
the
go
reason.
And control the Stargate.
Jake thinks the reason is because there's
I don't
a
think
secret
this.
Stargate.
I said that there is a compelling story where that is what they say about the invasion of Iraq, and maybe that's why no one understands it. That's
you
why everyone's
that
like,
aliens,
why are we even there? What are we even
you
doing?
Think aliens
well, because,
are
bro, they weren't going to tell you about the Stargate they were trying to fucking take control of, all right? Because that would make them sound fucking insane, all right?
Oh,
and the same
God.
Thing of Ukraine. Why are we doing this? Why are we funding it? Why is all this? Why is it so important? That's fucking crazy. Yeah, because there's a fucking Stargate. Maybe there's a third Stargate we need to find to make like a trifecta.
And that,
and, yeah, and that like fucking
that
opens up that opens up the actual fucking door to the aliens. Or
oh
whatever.
My God! And then what happens after that?
I don't fucking know, dude. I'm not L. Ron Hubbard. I'm not trying to sell you on something. I'm like, you know, that was a very fascinating and compelling story
here
about the
go.
Iraq War,
here
which
go.
Definitely does
aliens are behind
tickle
it.
All of the things that I enjoy in regards to ancient aliens and all the rest of it. But at the same time, definitely is then a logic gap filler for like, why did they do that? That doesn't really make any sense. Why did these people came from there? Why would they go and invade fucking Afghanistan or wherever?
I just don't want to get fucking
because
nuked.
Of that shit, bro, because they were trying to get Stargate.
And I don't want anyone to nuke anyone, and I don't understand why we're still here. Everything seems to be devolving and getting more crazy. People seem to be like becoming more antisocial. People seem to have lost touch with the channels that like connect us together and are hyper focused on the things that divide us. And we're not going to last very long if we continue this. And it's even like the people who are like, oh, we want to rule. What, do you want to rule over rubble? Like, I'm really confused about...
They want to rule on Mars.
It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I thought at the very least, if our elites are sociopathic, they would at least want to keep a planet running so that they could have a place to live.
The ambitious ones want more than one.
It's just madness to me. And like, I don't know. I just... It's hard for me to fathom that with all of... how far we've come, like how I think it was a couple of weeks ago they announced that we had hit a population of 8 billion, like Homo sapiens.
Huge shit posting. Oh my God. It's too many of us filth bags on the planet.
Well,
this
I mean,
isn't
like,
time to celebrate.
We crawled out of the primordial filth, and to the primordial filth we shall all return. I thought that was like an instinctive knowing in just about everybody, and like, just to think of how far we've come, and that the fact that we're toying around with the idea of like potentially wiping out all life, it just doesn't make fucking sense to me at all that there isn't that sort of mild altruistic humanitarian spark in everybody.
Nostradamus predicted it as
oh,
well, didn't
we
he?
Here we go. Here we go.
2023, World War III.
Here we go.
And he predicted King Charles this year, according to Mario.
I
what's
don't
his want name?
To do World War III. I don't think anybody does. I don't have anything that's fucking that much of a fire under my ass that I want to fucking fight people. Like,
it's pretty insane.
I don't understand the mentality behind it, is what I'm trying to say. The spiritual drive that wants to destroy the world.
No, and I guess like all the, you know, setting on fire of conscription fucking buildings and all the rest of it in Russia should show people that the Russian people don't want to do that shit either.
Yeah.
And they're not fucking prepared to die for this fucking idea of Russia, Putin's idea of Russia, which is why there's been such fucking crazy pushback against the recent mobilization of the people there. And I think
and there's massive pushback.
You try
here
doing that
well.
Mobilization in any fucking country, I don't think there's a single nation in the world that would like be like, yeah, let's fucking go. Well, I people mean, are saying that that's people, what the Ukrainians are well, like, but
then,
that's just fucking.
But even then, the West has been like that in terms of its propaganda system. The government even didn't even have to manufacture that much consent before everyone was turning their bio flags into Ukraine or whatever. Like, it was almost like some kind of hive mind group sync. Immediately,
well,
people
because,
sort of
it's
fell
because
into
they,
line.
It's because they pitched it in this
and
way.
And all anti-war sentiment, even on the left, began to dissipate.
Because they pitched it as this refugee humanitarian thing.
Yeah.
Rather than a...
war.
Actually, this is what's happening.
Yes.
Proxy war.
Yes.
Like, you know, yeah, these people are fleeing, but they're fleeing because we're going to supply their army with more weapons to continue fucking fighting and
but
doing all this crazy shit.
But the propaganda system here, it may not be like, oh, everybody get your boots on and go to war, but it's like everybody support the current thing and it works.
It's gross.
It fucking works.
I'm not here for world police, bro.
Yeah, same here, man.
I did enjoy the movie.
Like, I'm telling you,
I do not agree with the principle of it. You know,
I'll go back to Nigeria and like eat plantain and chill for the rest of my days. Like, I don't need to be. But even then, like, Africa is obviously not going to be exempt from all these conflicts. But Europe feels like it's on the brink of tearing itself apart. In America, they're already whispering about like civil war bullshit. Like, everyone needs to calm the fuck down, right? Calm the fuck down, okay?
Oh my God.
We don't need to fucking do this. We don't need to do this. We really don't need to do this. There has to be a better way.
Just got to struggle through, mate.
I don't know, man.
Hunker down, struggle through, do your thing, try and, you know, spread as much love as you can in the world.
And joy.
Because,
fuck knows what
everyone needs it right now.
Yeah, and fuck knows what the fuck's gonna happen next as well.
As Glenn Campbell says, try a little kindness.
Oh my God, who's Glenn Campbell? Another one of your cowboy singers that
I mean,
you like?
You could define him as a cowboy singer, I suppose. He's a country singer. He did lots of famous songs. He did Wichita Lineman.
Oh, I like that song a lot.
And Rhinestone Cowboy.
Okay, I like that. I like those songs.
So, you know, he's a big hit in the 60s, but he did a very cute song that I really like called Try a Little Kindness. And the lyrics for it are the most wholesome fucking things that I've ever heard in my life. And if you're ever feeling down, have a listen to that song.
Yeah. I wish we could play it on our way out now, but we'll get copyright strike. So you get our generic Low Society tune instead.
Hello. The end tune is one of my ones. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I didn't mean to call it generic. I meant generic for our show.
The beginning is a generic synth punk Low Society intro
that I
made.
All right. And that I sang on. But yeah.
And I mumbled on.
Mumbled a little bit, yeah. Well, yeah, it was lovely talking to you guys about all of this crazy shit. And we shall catch you again next week with more fun. Feel free to join us on Patreon, join our book club, and we shall catch you later. Goodbye.